Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Thank you very much for speaking with us here.
Oh, that's a pleasure. Yeah.
So you've just released your new album, The Yum Yum Tree. How is it different from your previous releases?
It's newer for a start. New tunes, things like that. And I think that maybe we were slightly less concerned about it being super commercial this time. I mean, we're not generally a very commercial band, but this time I wasn't so worried about it having to sound like a proper album, if you know what I mean. I was kind of like happy to let it float off into places and stay there for a bit rather than worrying about the drums coming in too quick and stuff. I was a little bit easier on the stuff there, really, this time.
How would you describe it to someone who hasn't heard it before?
I would first off tell them, don't expect any lyrics, because there ain't none on there. Strap in tight and be prepared for a journey of the mind, really. You know, it's kind of escapist music, which will tend to lift you off the planet if you're in a relaxed state of mind or whatever, you know. It's kind of like meant to be a little bit of a holiday from the humdrum everyday life, in a way. And then, okay, if you want to know what kind of music, you could say it has its rock moments, its reggae moments, there's a little bit of techno, a little bit of ambient in there, and all sorts, really.
So you've gone through some lineup changes since you got started, quite a few, actually. Do you miss some of the people you used to work with? I mean, is there any chance of a big reunion or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I do kind of miss them a little bit, you know. I mean, the band's been around for a long time, and it's sort of 25 years or something, so obviously some people are going to drift off and stuff. Some of them are real deep friends, you know. I'll always be great friends with them, and I do miss them. But then some of the people I find, you know, when I contact them again, they're not really still interested in the same thing anymore. You know, they've kind of moved on or whatever. I miss some of them. And then, 2 years ago, we did have a bit of a reunion where Joey Hinton came back on keyboards and Merv Pepler came in on drums, and we had almost as close as we could get to the original lineup. And this was actually recorded, and we made a DVD of this one.
That's the Sunrise.
As a little thing to mark that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
the Sunrise Festival.
That was the one, yeah.
So to what extent do the newer members of the band contribute to your sound? Has it evolved because there's different people in there, or is it...
The people who come in to the band over the years, you know, they do flavor it, obviously, because they're a whole character in there, you know. There's a whole, like, human person with their experiences and their influences and everything. So for that, it's good, you know. When people come in, I kind of have a listen to them and see what is natural to them to play, and then kind of push it towards that a little bit. So yeah, I mean, the people coming and going do add their little flavors. And at the moment, we've got Ollie, who is our drummer at the moment, actually lives here in America as well, and it's going to be really nice for our next album to have the opportunity to use him on drums, because he hasn't been able to be with us in England to record stuff. So I'm very much looking forward to that, because he's a hell of a drummer. You know, he's a very unique, very interesting, unusual drummer, especially when drummers watch him, they can't believe what they're seeing, you know, which is fun for me to observe.
So how do you come up with the titles for your songs?
Ah, see, it's tricky, because we don't have any lyrics, therefore there's no direct title, obviously, lurking within the song for us to extract. So it's very difficult, because when making these tunes, I don't particularly think, what's it going to be called? That's the last thing in my head. It's more like, what notes go with what, to make friends with which other notes, and the flow and the ebb of the music and stuff. And then suddenly it comes to the end and says, oh my goodness, we've got to try and call these moments in time something. So we're really pretty much clutching at straws, and then certain ones will have certain flavors, and we kind of just pretty much whatever we can grab, really. And so we've, by reputation, got a little bit of a thing for weird titles for our tunes. And often people ask where they come from, and it's very hard to say, you know.
Well, what about the Yum Yum Tree? Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, I mean, originally, I think when I was younger, I saw in London a restaurant called the Yum Yum Tree from out of the car window as I was flying past, and thought, I had a good laugh about that. I thought, wow, that's nice, you know. And we've been toying with the idea of calling it the Yum Yum Trees, the last few albums, and then people said, no, you can't call it that. And I thought, well, maybe you can, maybe you can't, whatever. And it suddenly turned out this one was quite appropriate for some reason. And, you know, having called it that, it's a few people have referenced it as to various things which are also called the Yum Yum Tree. Like, there is a chain of, I believe, Asian restaurants around this area called the Yum Yum Tree, which is you know, funny to find out. And also, I think there was an old film as well, an old movie, maybe, you know, in the days of black and white movies, called Under the Yum Yum Tree, which someone pointed out. So, yeah. For me, it just meant a tree covered in delights and fruits to pick and taste and explore, representing the tunes on the album, perhaps, you know. Whatever. It's a funny title, but we've called it that, and that's it, and it's called that. To deal with the consequences.
So how is your current tour going? Are you, you're on tour.
We're having our three-day break at home now between the two halves of the tour. One was on the West Coast, which we just done, which was three gigs in San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle, which were all really, really good, actually. Really, really very happy with how the music came across, and very happy with the amount of people who came, and very happy with what they said at the end. You know, they all loved it. So this all bodes well. And then we've got the East Coast coming up in a few days, and we're going to be hacking off across this huge country of yours, driving a quarter of the way around the planet to go to our next gig. But that seems to be the way of it out here, which is fine. It's a nice countryside.
Are there any festivals on your schedule? I know you've done a lot of festivals in your past.
Yeah, we've done plenty, and they are our favourite things to do, apart from the slightly hectic nature of the festival gig. You don't have a sound check, you just get shoved on stage, you have your hour, and then you're shoved off again. But the sound outdoors is wonderful, and the fact that we can see all the people in there is great. But sadly, on this tour, we're not actually doing any outdoor gigs. But I think we've got a few planned for later on in the year, but I'm not quite sure when they are, but there are maybe two or three coming together for that.
Is there anywhere in the world that you would like to have a gig that you haven't been to yet?
Oh, I'd like to explore further South America, actually. We've played in Chile. We played a festival in Chile last year before last, which was extremely successful and really good fun. And it was wonderful to be down there, because from England, that's a long way, you know. Mm-hmm. That's literally halfway around the world, right down, you know. And so that was good, and some more South American gigs would be great. And other than that, I'd like to revisit some of the places we've been already. We've been to Japan and Europe and Costa Rica and around, you know. And it'd be nice to revisit some of those places, really.
Do you have a favorite place that you like to go to play?
Well, each place has its own flavor, and it's nice for different reasons. When we play Italy, it's great because they are fanatically obsessed with our band. And they come from miles away, and it's nice like that. It feels like being a big band for a few days. Greece is wonderful to play because we go there and it's like playing in historical ruins, you know. It's, you know, Athens is a really old city, and to play there is amazing. And it's a very old musical community. They invented a lot of the music that we try and imitate. Mm-hmm. And they enjoy that, you know, the fact that we're having a go at their weird scales and stuff that they invented. Mm-hmm. Ah, where else? I mean, they're all just everywhere. It's wonderful for its flavor, you know. We love it all.
So tell me about your move to the U.S. What was behind your decision to move here?
Oh, well, I've visited here many times on tour, and I was very... there's a lot of respect a musician gets in this country, more so than in England, where I come from. For example, when you arrive here on a plane, you will go to the guy in the customs, and he'll first do the official thing, and he'll say, right, you're in a band, what instrument do you play? And you'll tell him the instrument, and he'll go, oh, yeah, I play that too, my friend, blah, blah, blah. Off it goes, you know? Mm-hmm. Which really does not happen in England or Europe or anywhere. They look at you with these grey faces and stamp your passport and grunt, and you walk through, you know? As a musician, is sort of a little bit like someone who works for a circus or... I don't know. It's a slightly different thing, really. And I really love the people out here, and Colorado especially is just, I've been here a few times, and every time I like it more. And I thought, well, why not try that for a little while, you know? And so far, so good. Very happy, you know?
So you mentioned that Ollie was here in the U.S. What about the other band members? I know Brandy's there with you, too.
Yeah, well, the only other member in the band now is my son, Silas, who's now 19 and plays amazing keyboards on there with everybody. And so that's us. We're a little four-piece now, which is kind of really, it's easy. It's much, much easier. And also, when we get here now, we don't have to be running 7 flights from England and freighting all our gear over and stuff. We can just casually drive to a gig, you know.
So I've heard actually in the past that you like to visit remote jungles to record the sounds there. Have you found any interesting places to do that here in the U.S.?
Not yet, no. I haven't had the time. I mean, most of what I've seen is from the motorway, from the interstate point of view, you know. It's driving to the little gig and playing the gig and stuff. But I look forward to it, I really do. We're about to move house up into the wilderness. So I'm sure I'll get some good sounds, you know. Maybe at night the wolves will howl at the full moon or something, you know. Or, you know, I do very much enjoy that. And I have run out of natural sounds. I've used them all many times. And it's time to actually restock and go out there with a microphone and do some of that. So I really look forward to that. You know?
What process do you use when you're creating your music?
Depends on the nature of the song. There's sort of 3 ways I'll go about it. One is I'll switch the synthesizer on in the morning, start playing it, and then I'll go, wow, that's a good idea, and I'll start from there and record it very quickly and then go back to it. So that's one way in. Another way is sitting around with a guitar, coming up with guitar-y based riff type things. And the other way is probably when we're in a band playing together and we come up with jam ideas and stuff, you know? But for the last few, it's been fairly synth-based, really. The beginning of the tunes will start with a synthesizer sequence and then one thing leads to another and the track expands and off it goes, you know? I look forward to doing some more real people playing music kind of thing with drums and bass players and 4 people sitting there putting their heads together and evolving into the music from nowhere is probably due a few of those kind of tunes. Our fans have said that due to the nature of moving and stuff, it's been tricky for me to actually record real drums and that. It's come out a little bit electronic recently, so I'm looking forward to getting some real people hitting things recorded on music.
Do you ever get stuck when you're working on a song, and how do you get past that?
Very, thankfully, quite rarely. And when I do get stuck, I get really stuck, and I think, well, how did I ever manage to ever think of anything to put on these tunes? And I've learned that what I do then is I take a 3-day break, you know, just forget all about it. And what's nice is when I'm sort of in the throes of making an album with all the tunes on the go, it's good to have a few on the go, you know, because you can get stuck with one and then think, well, I can't think anything about that, and you go to a totally different tune. And do a bit of that, and I try and sort of bounce from track to track to keep the interest up, you know. But yeah, no, writer's block is a nasty thing, and thankfully I'm very lucky not to get it too often, you know.
So what equipment do you use most in your studio?
In the studio, I've got a very nice old Trident 32-track mixing console made of wood. Well, it's got wood around the outside in the days when we used to make things out of trees, which still works. It's a little crackly and has a few spiders living in it, perhaps, but it works and sounds great. Then from there, I record onto 2 DR16 digital 16-track recorders, which are linked together to give me 32 channels, which I use. I tend to use that rather than a computer. I don't know why, because I like to have a box which you push a button on and it records music without thinking about Windows Update or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
And then other than that, just a load of guitars and keyboards and ethnic little bits and pieces of this and that and stuff, you know, whatever. Whatever's nearest to me, I will grab and use if I can.
What is the newest edition that you are using?
Well, very new, very, very new, which is a new synthesizer, which I haven't actually even used yet because I only got it yesterday, so I'm very excited about that. And when I finish this, I'll probably jump in there and start playing with that again. Called a Korg M50. Korg M50 is my newest synth, which I'm very much looking forward to diving into because I'm sure there's a huge potential in there. And other than that, I haven't bought anything for years, you know, so it's quite a treat to actually have and be excited about a new toy because I think it sounds great in there.
So do you use different equipment, like a whole different set of equipment when you're on the road, or do you sort of disassemble your studio a little bit, or what?
Yeah, a little bit. I kind of take down a sort of pared-down version of the studio, really. Obviously, I can't bring my huge mixing console with us, so we kind of shrink it all down. And it's pretty much the same, really. I mean, pretty much the same gear. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much as close as we can get.
So tell me about some of your influences. What music are you listening to besides Ozzer Tentacles, of course?
What am I listening to now? You see, I don't go and buy music usually because people can throw so much music at me. And so therefore, I quite often don't even know what it is that I'm listening to. People give me CDs of stuff they think I'd like. What's recently, that some gave me this crazy CD of a guy called Tipper, who's English, I believe, Tipper.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny sort of techno music. Very, very amusing music that makes me laugh a lot because it sounds like people all chopped up and thrown into a machine and coming out with all different words flying around the room. I like it when it gets all crazy like that. What else? A little bit of Mouse on Mars we've been listening to. They're a German, very unusual sounding techno outfit which makes speakers crunch in a certain way that we kind of enjoy. And they're good. Other than that, it's just for local friends, bands and stuff. They play us tapes and stuff, you know. Depends who puts the CD on in the car when we travel. I was in Ollie's car the other day and had about 4 hours of King Crimson. All right, that's enough for me. He likes it very much. I don't think he's in the room here. It's okay.
So what guitars do you like in particular? Do you have your favorites?
When I was younger, someone told me there's an amazing guitar for sale in this music shop in London. I went and fell in love with it and bought it. And that happened to be an Ibanez Artist, which is... I don't think they make them anymore. It's a really nice guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Old Ibanez wooden-looking thing, which plays beautifully and has outrageous electronics in it. You just click a switch on there and it makes the volume twice as much and then it makes it damn distort nicely. So that's my old one. Then a bit later than that, I got another Ibanez Gem, which is designed by Steve Vai, I believe, and that works well as my acrobatic guitar where I can throw it around and tremolo arm and squeeze the sound and treat it pretty rough and it seems to still smile and stay in tune, you know? So that's my one when I want to bend things a little bit. And that's pretty much it, really. I just have the two. I have an acoustic as well, a Yamaha electro-acoustic guitar, which I use for certain tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, really. I've not bought guitars for years because these ones are fine. They do me well, you know.
So in the past, you've expressed an interest in writing music for film. Is that something you'd still like to do?
I would still love to do it. If the opportunity came along, I would be well up for it, yeah. Yeah, there was a phase where I did quite a lot of that, and I was doing... documentaries about ancient civilizations and things like that, which was right up my alley, really. And they would give me, for example, a piece of film of a helicopter shot panning over the pyramids in Egypt, and they said, "Can you write music to that, please?" And I went, "Yep, no problem." I was happy to do that. And so I had quite a lot of experience with that, yeah, and it's quite frustrating because they will commission a bit and then you bring it to them and say, "That's great, we want it to be 2.5 minutes shorter than that." And so you have to go home and just say, "Yes, no problem," and go and work for another week. And, you know, it's frustrating but very lucrative and very satisfying to see when it actually comes on the TV, you see your music on there. It feels really nice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'd love to do some more of that and believe that maybe the music we do, certain parts of it would do very well, you know, because there's no words to sing on there and atmospheric music and it would, you know, lend itself to it perhaps, you know.
So do you think you might do something special for your 30th year as a band?
Maybe, yeah. I think we certainly should do. I mean, that's quite an achievement, really. Because, I heard an average length of bands in England, anyway, how long they last. You wouldn't believe it. The average length of how long a band lasts in England is 2 weeks. If you take them all, you know, because some last 2 days, some last 20 years, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the average is about 2 weeks. So I think 30 years is pretty good average, really, for us.
Tell me about some of your side projects that you and your other band members are involved in.
Yeah, there was Nodensictus, which was for a while, well, years ago, someone asked myself and Joey, who was the keyboard player then, whether we would be able to fill in an hour and a half of, you know, ambient style music without real drums. And we said, yeah, okay, we'll try that. What should we call it? Nodensictus. Joey had a band a while back called Nodensictus, and we thought, well, we could revive that and call it that. And then so along the years we've done that occasionally as a little thing, as a side project thing. We bought out a tape called The Grove of Cells, which was on cassette only, and then we bought out a CD with some of that on it and some other bits called Space Lines. We sort of did the rounds and became fairly collectible, I found out in the magazine the other day, which is bizarre. And we still do that as well. We still are able to go out and do our two-piece gigs, which is a nice kind of excuse to play some of the slightly lighter sides of the music that we've made on the Osric albums, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, then that's the only one I've actually been involved in, a side project. Then there was Merv and Joey, our keyboard player and drummer, went off and did a band called Eat Static, which mm-hmm. was a kind of technoid techno band, which got fairly successful in England for a while. And before that, there was another one called The Ululators, which was a group of them all went off and did a slightly more reggae, lighter, daytime, jovial version of what we do, you know, more bouncy, less mental, more, slightly more family-orientated, friendlier version of what we do, you know. And I think that's most of them, really, that I can remember right now.
So tell me something about the Pong Master. Who is the Pong Master? How'd you come up with that?
The Pong, right, well, if you really want to know, I really came up with that. I was in Thailand, lying on my back in a hotel room. Heard this Thailand talk coming from the street down below, and it sounded like he'd said some Pong Master, some Chinese word, and I thought, well, that's really funny. The Thai word, sorry, not Chinese, Thai speak, which sounded a little bit like someone had said that. So I just wrote it down in my book that I was sort of writing phone numbers and whatever, little notes and pictures and whatever. And came back home, and then someone said, that's great, you should do a concert called the Pong Master's Ball and invite all your friends' bands along to come and play. And so we did that. And that became a bit of a tradition, and we ended up, I think we've done five of those altogether now in England. And that's kind of where it came from just literally mishearing someone saying something at some point in Asian country.
Yeah. Do you think there will be another Pong Master Ball?
Maybe there will, yeah. I mean, there's no reason not to. Whether we could do it here and people would understand what it implied, I don't know. But we're probably due for another one within the next couple of years, you know, so we might do that, you know, get some of our friends over and get the whole family all rocking out on the same night. It'd be fun.
So you're going to be doing your East Coast version of your tour. How long is that going to last, that you'll be on tour?
I think probably all told about a month, really, about 3 weeks to a month.
Enjoy being on tour, or do you prefer working in the studio? Or?
Well, I very much enjoy them both, and they're totally opposite in a way. Even mm-hmm. though they're both musical, the studio's internals, you're inside your own mind, and live, you're spreading out to lots and lots of people. And so, yeah, I enjoy them both. The thing I find tricky is the transition from one to the other.
Mm.
You know, if I'm very nice and comfortable at home, it's like, oh, do I really have to get on the tour bus? Okay, and then I get on the tour bus, and after a day, it's like, wow, this is fun. And then it comes to the end of the tour, and I come back home, and I've forgotten how to feed myself, and I've forgotten how to, you know, because on tour, you're very much, you're fed, and you're told what to do when, and there's a time you have to be here and there, and you're kind of like, a little bit like a lost sheep at home for a day or two, until you realize, yes, I can remember how to cook, and I can, yep, this makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good fun. They're both such fun and both equally enjoyable, really, but in such different ways. It's quite a colourful life, really, in that way.
Wonderful. We're really looking forward to having you here in Pittsburgh on June 19th.
Great. Well, I look forward to that.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All right.
It'll be fun.
Well, thank you.
Pleasure. Yep. Thank you very much.